Jo, klar, als ich sehe, hayu at ich Powatum. Today is the 12th of May, 2021. This is our third meeting of Linguistics 181, and we will be covering handouts 1 through 3 today. We already covered these on Saturday, but because attendance on Saturday was not required, we'll be doing it again today, but more quickly. I will be posting both Saturday's lecture and today's lecture on our course webpage. If you need review of this material, please download those lectures as needed. I am recording this lecture. Don't be afraid to speak up. I am only recording my own voice. If you speak up in the Zoom call, your voice will not appear on the recording. We have about half an hour before our first break. My goal is to cover handouts 1 and 2 and get into handout 3 before our break. What is linguistics? Briefly put, linguistics is the study of human language. Surprisingly to me, linguistics is a young science. We didn't really talk about linguistics before the 20th century. Before the 20th century, people did study grammar. Grammar has been studied for about 2,500 years, so human beings have known about grammar for a long time. Grammar has to do with how words are put into sentences. Why do people study grammar? Handout one gives us several reasons. Sorry, handout two gives us several reasons. We're not there yet. For now, we're talking about linguistics in general. Linguistics has many subfields. One of the surprising things about linguistics that we learn when we start studying it is that linguistics is far more complicated than most people expect. Many people expect that if they study a language, they'll be able to figure it out sooner or later. But it turns out that studying any human language is a lifelong endeavor. We're going to be interested mainly in four subfields of linguistics, the ones shown in one: the subfields of phonology, morphology, syntax, and semantics. Phonology is the study of speech sounds, how we use sounds to communicate. Morphology is the study of the structure of words, how words mean what they mean, and how words often consist of several parts. Sometimes we have simple words that have only one meaningful part. Sometimes we have very complex words that have several meaningful parts. Generally speaking, Neuchâtel words tend to be more complex than English words. Syntax is the study of sentence structure, that is, how we combine words to convey significant meanings. Last, semantics is the study of language meaning, how sentences mean what they mean. We will only touch on semantics in this course. Mainly, we will be concerned with phonology, morphology, and syntax. Even though these are only three of many subfields of linguistics, I think you will find that understanding something about phonology, morphology, and syntax will vastly increase your understanding of how your language works and how it is different from English and how to teach it to others. I'll stop for a minute to address exercise one. You will not be doing exercise one for your homework. Instead, we're going to discuss it together right now. Exercise one asks you, what do you find interesting about language? Are you interested in any particular subfield? I invite your responses. There are two more points I would like to make on page one before we move on. First, the first point is that linguistics is only one aspect of anthropology. Anthropology is the study of human beings. Human beings are amazingly complex creatures. Language is just one of the many things that we're able to do. It turned out, once anthropologists started studying linguistics seriously, that linguistics was so complex it deserved its own science. But there's still a close connection between the way we study linguistics as linguists and the way that anthropologists study linguistics. At least one of you said that you're interested in culture. Culture falls under anthropology. That is one of the things that anthropologists look at. And many anthropologists and linguists are of the opinion that you can only understand a culture properly when you hear it explained in that culture's own language. Edward Sapir was of this view, and that is why he gathered so much material on New Chanoth culture in New Chanoth language. The second point that I would like to make on page one has to do with a misconception about linguists. The term linguist is used in everyday language to mean people who speak many languages. However, this is not what linguists do. There are many linguists who do speak several languages, but there are just as many linguists who only speak their own native language. What linguists do is study patterns in human language, how human languages work. Linguists do not necessarily speak more than one language. Let's take a look now at exercise two. In the paragraph just above exercise two, your handout says we will be interested mainly in the subfields of language acquisition, phonetics, phonology, morphology, syntax, and historical linguistics. Exercise two asks, why are these six subfields important for language revitalization? I'm going to finish talking about handout one, then we'll take our first break, our first and only break. On Wednesdays, we only meet for 2 hours, so we only get one break. Saturdays, we meet for 4 hours, so we'll get three breaks on Saturdays. The next two exercises on handout one are exercises three and four, and these will be part of your homework. So I will be giving you time to work on these today, and you will need to finish them in your own time and then submit them. Exercise three asks, different languages do not use all the same sounds. What sounds do New Chanoth and English share? What sounds are only found in one language or the other? We gave some examples of these on Saturday, some examples of sounds that only New Chanoth has or only English has, and also some sounds that both languages share. If you might find it helpful to use the alphabet summary handout, which I'm gonna put a link for it in the chat. And if you are already very familiar with the New Chanoth and English alphabets, you probably won't need this handout. If you aren't, you will probably find it useful. Let's look at exercise four. Exercise four gives you eight New Chanoth words and asks, how are these words related? Can you identify any parts that are smaller than a word but meaningful? What do these parts mean? For example, we just looked at a couple of words having to do with cedar bark. Inner cedar bark is called pitsop, pitsop. And the color orange is called pipitskuk, pipitskuk, which literally means looks like inner cedar bark. We can identify, although these two words are different, they both share the root pits, P-I-C, pits. So we can say that the sequence P-I-C, pits, is meaningful in New Chanoth, and that it means something like inner cedar bark. This exercise asks you to look at some other words and try to identify parts of them that are meaningful. Let's go through these words and pronounce them together. The first word means cutting, especially cutting fish. The word is Chia. Chia. Next, the word for totem pole. Chinus. Chinus. Mountain. Nochi. Nochi. Mountain range. Nuchanus. Nuchanus. House. Mahti. Mahti. Home, village, or tribe. Ma'as. Ma'as. Families or tribes. Matmas. Matmas. And the Ma'nus nations. Ma'nus. Ma'nus. I don't plan to discuss this anymore right now because you will have time at the end of class to work on this exercise and ask questions if you like. Please think it over as you take your break. We're now moving on to handout two. Some of you might have noticed that I jumped the gun. I started talking about handout two while we were still in handout one. That's because I'm so excited about handout two, because I'm very interested in the history of linguistics. Probably unlike most of you. However, there's a lot of interesting stuff to know about the study of linguistics. Many people think that the reason that we human beings are able to think about such complex ideas is because of language, because we have language to express the ideas. Without language, the idea goes, we wouldn't be able to express those thoughts. This is a very controversial subject. We will not be taking a position on this. I'm just sharing it as an example of what an important topic language is in the study of human beings and the universe. Handout two talks about the fact that whereas linguistics is a young science, the study of grammar is very old. People have studied grammar for at least as long as people have had writing. For at least as long as people have had writing, people have noticed that some people talk differently from others. And human beings are very good at telling other people that the way they speak is wrong and the way we speak is right. Human beings are very attached to this idea. Handout two gives some reasons why people have studied grammar. These are some of the main reasons people have studied grammar. First, to tell other people how to talk right. That is, to prescribe correct grammar. Second, to make laws and holy books available in other languages. Third, to promote the use of one language over another. When one group of people is trying to make another group of people speak their language, they have to be able to teach it. This is a very important topic for us because this happened very recently in the history of Canada. Canada, for many years, pursued an assimilationist policy towards First Nations people. The country of Canada tried to make First Nations people stop speaking their traditional languages and start speaking English. This is just one example of why people study grammar. A fourth reason why people study grammar is to help people who are going to go to another country to learn that country's language. Take a look at exercise five. Ferdinand de Saussure was a very well-known French linguist who was born in the 1800s and died in the 1900s. He observed that the association of words to meanings is arbitrary. For example, think of two words from English and Nuchanov that mean the same thing. Do the words sound similar? How do speakers know what they mean? To help this discussion, I've already written down a few words. Take a look. I hope you can read this. The Nuchanov word for man is chakup, and the word for woman is thutsma. The English word for man is man. The English word for woman is woman. Man sounds nothing like chakup. Thutsma sounds nothing like woman. The question is, how do people know what these words mean? Exercise 6 asks you to consider 8 or so words of Nuchanov and their English translations. The question is, which words are opposed to each other in each language? How are the two systems different? This is a somewhat complex question, which is why I've written this out for you. So what I've tried to show here are some of the oppositions amongst these words. Let's just look at the words for man, woman, husband, and wife. English has 4 words for these concepts. Man is a male adult. Woman is a female adult. Wife is a female adult who is married to someone. Husband is a male adult who's married to someone. Where English has these 4 words, Nuchanov just has 2. Chakup, meaning man or husband, and thutsma, meaning woman or wife. I've drawn these lines to show the oppositions amongst these words. So we can say that man is opposed to husband, right? They have some things in common and some things are different. Man and husband both refer to male adults, but a husband is a married male adult. Man is also opposed to woman. Man and woman both refer to adults, but a man is a male adult and a woman is a female adult. Similarly, woman is opposed to wife and wife is opposed to husband. So we have 4 oppositions here, at least the way I've drawn it. Whereas between these two Nuchanov words, we have just 1 opposition between chakup and thutsma. Now we'll see many cases like this where one language has more words and one language has fewer words. In this case, English has more words and Nuchanov has fewer. Take a look at this example. Here's one where Nuchanov has more words and English has fewer. So in English, we can compare person to bear. Person and bear are both animals. They're both living creatures. They're both mammals. But a bear is one kind of species. A person is another kind of species. In fact, person refers to only one species, but bear refers to at least 4 species, right? There's the black bear, there's the grizzly bear, there's the polar bear, there's the panda bear. And we can also talk about the American black bear versus the European black bear. Take a look at Nuchanov. The word Nuchanov word for person is koas, koas. And Nuchanov has 2 words for bear, chimps and nani. Does anyone know the difference between chimps and nani? Chimps is a black bear. Nani is a grizzly bear. This difference between the two languages leads to a certain amount of confusion for people whose first language is English and whose second language is Nuchanov. In English, we have just 1 word for bear, so we're used to calling all bears bear. In Nuchanov, we have 2 different words depending on the species. If someone has grown up speaking English, they will have trouble remembering to use the right word in Nuchanov. But let's go back to exercise 6. Exercise 6 asks, which words are opposed to each other in each language? How are these two systems different? I just talked about words for people, men, women, and bears. Do you see any other interesting oppositions in these data? We are now on handout three, language families of British Columbia. We talked on Saturday about what a language family is. British Columbia, that is First Nations languages of British Columbia, fall into seven different language families, which are shown in one. Those families are Algonquian, Haida, Kootenai, Naudé, Salishan, Tsimshianik, and Wakashin. Which of these seven families does Nunchaknoth belong to? We just saw an example of a similarity between Wakashin languages. In handout three, examples two and four, we have the sentences, "The mountains are snow-topped" in Kwakwala and Dtidot, and we see some similarities between these. Basically, both languages have the word "kwis" for snow, and Nunchaknoth is the same. The Nunchaknoth word for snow is "kwis." The Nunchaknoth word for snowy weather is "kwisa," "kwisa." That's an example of a similarity that suggests that these three languages, Nunchaknoth, Dtidot, and Kwakwala, belong to the same family. The map I'm showing you now shows the rough distribution of native language families of North America at the time of contact, that is, around 1500, when Europeans started to settle in North America. One of the first things you'll notice is that most of the language families in the center and eastern part of North America cover huge areas. These languages are spoken by people who migrated every single year. They would move to different parts of the land in order to harvest different resources. Now to take a look at the languages on the west coast of North America, roughly from what's now California up to what's now Alaska. You see that there are many more language families on the West Coast, and this has to do basically with the availability of food. The West Coast is right on the ocean. It gets lots of water and rainfall, so there is lots of food, plant foods and animal foods. As a result, people did not have to move around as much to get the foods that they needed. They could stay more or less in the same place. We're now looking at a magnification of the parts of the map that correspond to what are now the ocean coasts of British Columbia and Washington. I think you all see Vancouver Island there in the middle. And you'll see that most of the western half of Vancouver Island is colored gold. Most of the eastern half is colored a peach color. Those colors correspond to the Wakashin and Salishan language families. Probably most of you are aware that the languages of the east coast of Vancouver Island are Coast Salish. Hulkuminem and Sinchathan are those languages. Sinchathan is the language of the Saanich Peninsula. That's the big chunky part at the southern end of Vancouver Island, just north of the city of Victoria. And Hulkuminem is the language of the areas that are now Nanaimo and Duncan. But Dtidot, Nunchaknoth, and Kwakwala are spoken on the west coast of the island and the northern part of the island, and these are Wakashin languages. You'll also see that the Wakashin languages continue upwards along the mainland of British Columbia. That band of gold right across from Vancouver Island represents Kwakwala speaking, Heiltsuk speaking, and Iwikila speaking communities. And the northernmost chunk represents Haisla speaking communities. These are the seven Wakashin languages: Makah, Dtidot, Nunchaknoth, Kwakwala, Heiltsuk, Iwikila, and Haisla. Makah is the only Wakashin language that is spoken in what is now the United States. English also belongs to a language family. The language family that English belongs to is called Indo-European. Indo-European includes most of the languages now spoken in Europe and in northern India, including Hindi, Urdu, and Sanskrit. Hindi, which is the main language of India, is related to English, distantly related to English. They don't really sound anything like each other anymore, but linguists think that they used to be the same language about 6,000 years ago. One of the words that we find across the Indo-European languages is the word for wolf. Wolf. English is one of the few languages that where wolf starts with a W. W. Wolf. In most Indo-European languages, it starts with a V. For example, in Russian, the word for wolf is volk. Volk. In Scandinavian languages, the word is ulf. Ulf. It just starts with U. There's no W. So there's only a small minority of Indo-European languages that preserve that W. But linguists think that that was the original sound. So, in this case, majority rules leads us in the wrong direction. There's a small number of languages, including English, where wolf is still pronounced with a W, and linguists think that that is the original sound. We don't have time to go through the reasoning. The reasoning is complex. And you won't be able to consider as much data as you might like to answer exercise 9. But I'm just citing that as an example of how majority rules is often where linguists start when reconstructing conservative forms, but it's not always the right answer. Let's take a look now at exercise 10. Exercise 10 has to do with the data in example 7. Example 7 gives four different words as they are pronounced in all seven Wakashan languages. So let's look at the Nunchaknoth words first. The Nunchaknoth word for red is tlehok. Tlehok. The word for weeping is ahak. Ahak. The word for mountain is nuchi. Nuchi. And the word for path is tashi. Tashi. Now take a look at how these words are pronounced in all the Wakashan languages. If you look at the words for red, you'll see that every single Wakashan language has a word for red which starts with the t sound. In northern Wakashan languages, Haisla, Heiltsuk, Wikila, Kwakwala, that word is pronounced tlaqua. Tlaqua. It's written a little differently in each language, but actually they're pronounced the same. In Nunchaknoth, it's tlehok. Tlehok. And in Dichi-Dada-Makaw, it's pronounced tlehok. Tlehok. So, based on the fact that every single Wakashan language has a word for red that starts with the t sound, it's reasonable to assume that if these all came from the same language, that language's word for red also started t. But what about the second consonant? In North Wakashan, that second consonant is kwa. Kwa, which we write with a Q. Kwa. In Nunchaknoth, it's h, that is a back h, h, and in Dichi-Dada-Makaw, it's h, h. What do you think the original sound was? Was it k, that is q, h, that is back h, or h, that is back x? If I can paraphrase what you just said, Janie. You're noticing that among these three sounds, kwa, kha, and ha, kwa is sort of the strongest, it's the hardest, right? It involves completely stopping airflow through the vocal tract, kh, kh, whereas kh is a little softer, kh, and ha is the softest of all. And just like you said, over time, languages change, and it is generally the case that sounds get weaker over time, not stronger. So just based on the fact that Q is a stronger sound, back H is a weak sound, and X is somewhere in the middle, we can guess that the original sound was probably kwa. In South Wakashan, that is Nuchonalth, Tsitsitan, Makaw, it softened to ch. And in Nuchonalth, it softened even further to ha. That is exactly what linguists think, that the Q is probably the original sound. Exercise 10 asks you to look for other patterns like that in the data and see what you can say about them. You will have to rely on the limited information available to you, but I think you will be able to say something interesting about some of these data. Chooch, that's the end of today's lecture. You have 19 minutes to work on your homework in class.